people don't necessarily think that there will be any ramifications for their actions, especially if it's being broadcast live and people are watching it and not reporting it to the police, or it's not being taken down for a while, or if even if people are being caught, so to speak, and there not being any punishments, which we see a lot with sexual assault and rape cases, that could also be a contributing factor as well.
What is the pathology of someone who would videotape something like a sexual assault? How do you fathom that?
Well, a couple of different things. People might not actually see it as sexual assault. So as strange as that may seem to us, some people might think of this as consensual sex or just rough sex. For us, we might think that that's crazy, but for an offender, that's actually something that people say rather commonly, is that they think that it is a consensual act when it might not be, and that someone is just putting up a fight so that they don't seem, quote, easy or loose, when we're talking about a male on female perpetration. Also, I would say it can be this idea of the larger rape culture where we don't think that these things are very serious, or that people actually want to kind of brag or exhibit their sexual conquests that they might see online.
One of the more recent examples was of a 15-year-old up in Chicago in what was obviously some sort of a gang rape. Mm-hmm. How do you explain that this would go streaming on the internet?
I would say that the perpetrators probably did not think about what the ramifications would mean by doing that. So they probably, as most young kids, don't think that far into the future. And they're also very much probably immersed in social media. So everything just seems like a good idea to put online. And the fact that there were multiple perpetrators, sometimes groupthink, oftentimes can affect offenders. And with that specific instance, you know, people who would be watching that online would be watching child pornography, essentially. And if they saved it, they would be possessing child pornography. That's also an issue when we think about this live streaming of sexual assault and rapes. If it's someone who's underage, we're seeing a whole other realm of offenses come into play.
What is the responsibility of these social media companies like Facebook or Google to be monitoring this stuff and to get it off of there?
It's, in my opinion, a very high responsibility. And actually, I would say, I would even take the word responsibility out of it and say duty, because they are giving you this function of this live stream, you know, capability. Someone should be monitoring it. Facebook has come out and said that they do have someone that monitors, you know, around the clock. But
is this a requirement?
I think it should be, especially when we're talking about underage individuals being victimized live. I think that we need to have monitoring. And I know the idea is going to come up about Big Brother and who's watching, but if we're talking about victimizing people sexually online in live time, I don't think that that's something that should be broadcast.
But how does something like this even slip through the cracks if someone at Google or Facebook is monitoring this stuff?
Probably, I would say, due to the sheer number of people who would be online live broadcasting at one time. Also, if they're posting it into personal closed groups, that might pose, you know, an obstacle. But it, I think, would need more vigilant monitoring than what we're seeing if we are seeing more of these sexual assaults and rapes being broadcast live.
We know that sexual assault is a traumatic thing. It just leaves an indelible mark on a human being. What added trauma does having this go out on social media do?
A lot. And so I've interviewed quite a large number of sexual assault survivors and their family, of which only a few have had instances of having the pictures or videos online. The issue for this, if we're talking about live streaming this, if your name is associated with this live stream, so if they had, you know, live sexual assault of Shelley Clevenger and my name is attached to that, potentially if somebody Googled me, my live rape could potentially come up on a Google search. And if even if the video didn't come up, the fact that I was involved as a victim and publicly named, because things don't often go away on the internet, you have that record, or at least a memory of that record forever.
So you're almost re-victimized and over and over again.
Yes. And so the one survivor that I'm thinking of in particular, there was not a live video, but a video of what had happened that was put on a private Facebook page. And so that video existed, and people saw her being victimized over and over again, you know, not in real time, but still online. And so having the worst thing that ever happened to you seen by many people and potentially seen by your family members, people you work with, it adds a whole other level to victimization.
What is the punishment for something like that? Is there actually a statute that one would be charged on in addition to the assault?
It depends. There's not, our laws have not necessarily caught up with our technology. Sometimes they will add on additional harassment charges or cyber stalking, depending upon the circumstances of the case. But just the fact that it would be a online video posting, or we see revenge pornography kind of come into play sometimes with this, there is not a specific statute as of yet.
You are curating or involved in an exhibit that's going to be at the Milner Library on sexual assault and domestic violence. What was the impetus for the exhibit?
My research is sexual assault survivors and intimate partner violence survivors, and I teach a victimology class, and we spend so much time on this. I wanted my students to think about this in a different way. So even though we're not artists, we're criminologists, I had them create an art piece using a children's toy that made a statement about domestic violence or sexual violence. And so all of the students had to come up with this art piece to convey some sort of emotion or fact. So one of the examples, I have a student who did a Guess Who game and blacked out 1 in 4, because 1 in 4 women are victims of sexual violence on college campuses. So it's making a statement for Sexual Assault Awareness Month, which is April. So it will be on display in the lobby of Milner, so that lots of foot traffic, you know, especially during finals time, getting to the end of the semester. And when people go by, they will see facts about sexual assault or intimate partner violence from an unexpected source. We don't think about children's toys necessarily in relation to these topics. And what my students have done is very powerful.
Thank you so much for talking about this important issue. We've been talking with Professor Shelley Clevenger. She is with the Criminal Justice Department at Illinois State University. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
I'm Judy Valente.